listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Las Vegas lead today, baseball, and how I hear people. In fact, Bernie Fratto, who hosts the weekend edition of this show at 11 o'clock Pacific on Saturday nights, says he thinks, and he's very connected in Detroit, he thinks 50-50 baseball has a season. Wow, that would be a tragedy. I think it's the lead.
Yeah, and the Major League Baseball Players Association, they are not expected to even entertain the owner's latest financial offer. Instead, the players are expected to counter for more games than the proposed 80-plus that the owners were looking at.
So what did you think about the players that have spoken out? It feels like a guy like Scherzer, obviously three-time Cy Young winner, a guy that, you know, there's a certain types that don't, you know, if someone's got an opinion on everything, eventually, even if it's right or wrong, people don't care all that much. But when someone speaks up and with the pedigree like that, it felt meaningful to me. How do you think that is going to affect the PR battle? Because I think that's what this ultimately is. Who is the public going to blame is the ultimate question.
Yeah, the owners have come out, and so they've had the two proposals that have gone public. And so because you see the numbers and because fans look at those numbers and say, oh my God, what I would kill to make that type of money, even if it is a salary reduction, PR-wise, the owners have tried to take the offensive to put all the blame back on the players. But then you've got Max Scherzer, and I've heard other guys that have said this as well too, from the MLBPA, saying, okay, why don't you share everything? Like, let's show all the documentation. Let's show everything so we can really see what the economic breakdown is. Instead, owners have said, well, you know, 40% of our income comes from stadiums. Players want that stuff to be made public, and the owners just aren't willing to share it.
Yeah, great recap. So let's break down, because listen, if you're listening to this show, you're probably at least have a casual interest in baseball, and you might be a huge fan. Who's to blame if there's no season, I think, is a humongous question. So in March, there was an agreement, and to me, that agreement made sense, which was if there are X number of games, which let's say is a certain percentage of the 162, then that's the percentage of the contracts that would be paid out. So you work half the time, you get paid half the time. Kind of makes sense. Now, could the players have fought that? Yeah, and you got to give them credit, I think, that they didn't. You know, in March when the pandemic felt even more, I think at that time, if I'm thinking back, we didn't know exactly how many people were, you know, there could be, have been 300,000-400,000 die. Right. And obviously 100,000 is a horrible number for, you know, to die. But at the time, it wouldn't have felt right, I think, to fight over money, which it kind of still doesn't, right? That's, I think, the point here.
Yeah.
So I think the March agreement made sense to me. Now, the owner's perspective, and let me ask you, Jonas, of saying, now listen, we're going to prorate the games. That makes sense, right? Play half the games, we're going to, you know, pay half the money because we're going to make half the money. But if we can't make the same amount of money per game because of fan limitations, we all got to feel the pain. That's the take. That is the position of the owners. What's your take on that position?
Well, I think the players already agreed to feel the pain initially. They already said, we will take a prorated
some of the pain,
salary.
Right?
Yeah, we will take a prorated salary. The fact that the owners have now gone back a second time and realized, oh, but wait, there's more. We didn't realize that all this stuff was going to be impacted. I think the owners are partly to blame, and either you guys can meet in the middle or the MLBPA is not going to agree to anything.
Okay, so that's interesting. You're saying if the owners would have said at the time in March, hey, listen, we think that, you know, fans being in the stands, if we do come back, a big uncertainty, and we got to have some adjustment if revenue's down because of that, you would have thought that was reasonable. You think the main problem is it wasn't brought up then?
Yeah, it wasn't brought up then. And then the way that they've done this latest proposal, they tried to take almost a divide and conquer approach to where the highest paid players are taking a significant increase, but the lower paid guys aren't taking as much of it as much of a decrease. And it's almost like they're trying to make the lower paid guys say, well, you know, this isn't the worst deal in the world, when the higher paid guys are saying the opposite. So it feels like a divide and conquer approach.
Except I looked at the breakdown here. So if it's a $30 million salary prorated for half the games, $15 million, they're supposed to take $7 million. So they're getting their number cut in half, more than half again.
Yeah.
But all right. But then you go the $20 million to $10 million is $5 million. So even, you know, again, I'm not saying even at 20, but then you go all the way to the $10 million salary, $5 million prorated, $3 million in this proposal. So they're getting 40% cut. And, you know, all the way, and then even the $5 million salary, and again, even, but is $2.5 million prorated, obviously, $1.6 million in this proposal. So the only people that are not really getting, as Fez would say, a haircut, this discount, it would be the lowest of the lowest paid.
Right.
So it's not just the to me, the narrative felt like the highest of the highest paid would feel the pain, but it's pretty much everyone but the minimum people.
Yeah.
It seems like.
And that's what I think their approach was if we can get the guys that aren't making, you know, as nearly as much and are the lower paid guys, if we can get them to say, hey, you know, hold on a second, this isn't the worst deal in the world for us, maybe that creates some dissension amongst them. That's why I think Scott Boras has come out and encouraged all of the players around baseball, don't even negotiate financial terms anymore. We've already agreed to what we're going to get financially. Do not even entertain the idea.
That's Jonas Knox. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, talking about baseball's labor dispute. Bad timing. What's at stake here? I think it's gigantic. Now, I do think it's interesting that in the dialogue from the player side, you are hearing about, and this was the quote, with the current information provided, which is really, as you said, they want the books opened up.
Yeah.
And that's something the owners have fought through all of this labor strife over the years. But if you go back to 1994, and to me, it's still a stain on baseball. It's still something people, I think, have, I know some have resentment over. And it's amazing to think during the first World War, there were zero World Series missed. Second World War, zero missed. Great Depression, zero missed. 9/11, zero missed. The Black Sox scandal, the World Series itself was fixed. They didn't miss it. It's still in the books. The only Pete Rose, all the trouble. Hey, didn't miss any World Series. The only one in the books I went and read, looked at all the champions today, was 1994. Now, if they actually have a second, I mean, imagine this would be the second time in all those years that we didn't have a World Series when everything fell, or many things fell, let's say, better than people had hoped or expected to even allow for a season potentially here. And the idea that they'd be fighting over, and this is the last piece of the pie. I mean, obviously the owners could deal with this. The players also financially could deal with this. I'm not saying, you know, to me, I'm actually on the player side here. And it's for a different reason than you, Jonas. And I think you've got a good, valid point. Hey, you make the agreement in March, it has to mean something. But it also is, as an owner of a business, I understand that if I hit the home run or if the home run is hit by the team, I'm going to have a big chunk of the benefit, the owner's benefit. You know, Fox Sports Radio, the Patriots, anything. If you own it, you know, look at Michael, you know, the idea that Michael Jordan rose to the point of being an owner, very meaningful. But you know what else it means? That you take the downside. So if somehow, some way baseball had done, and there's no rev share, right, in baseball. So if they had done exceptionally well, the owners wouldn't be looking to dip. You know, you guys didn't expect us to do so well. Here's an extra billion or two. Nah, that wouldn't happen. So when the downside happens, you deal with it. So to me, that's the story. The owners get the upside. They've got to deal with the downside. Yeah. And the fact that the labor side, the players, were so amenable, so reasonable in March, I think is another reason they should get the support here. And again, I don't think it's a situation of, well, we should give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm saying that in a time where it'd be an atrocity if we missed another World Series, and who knows what ramifications there'd be for baseball, the idea that these guys are fighting over the last 10% or whatever, to me is egregiously bad. Closing thoughts.
Yeah, as an owner, you assume the risk. You like, this is part of being an owner. This is part of owning anything.
I agree.
And so the idea that players have already, you know, come to terms with the fact that we're going to take a financial loss. Some of us are going to lose millions upon millions of dollars. We know that. The fact that the players came back and their counterproposal was that they wanted more games, I think that was a strategy by the players to make it public. Hey, no. We're willing to play. In fact, we want to play more games than the owners even want us to play, but unfortunately they're being unreasonable with their asks.
Boy, I tell you, no wonder you get these negotiations with iHeartRadio with your contract. I mean,
right.
You're almost your own agent. I love it.
That's how I got the private jet.
That's Jonas Knox.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So, RJ, taking a closer look at the 2018 quarterback draft class, and this becomes an even bigger season for the first three quarterbacks taken, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Josh Allen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And a lot of talk today. I thought it was kind of funny. I was interested to hear what you thought of this. Is really the main story on the Talking Head shows was Sam Darnold was talking about not talking. Didn't that seem funny that the main take was that Darnold was telling us that he's not really going to talk much anymore, except he's talking about it.
Well, it was a Baker Mayfield. Mayfield.
I'm sorry. I misspoke there.
But Sam Darnold doesn't. I don't think he's done a lot of talking since he got mono. I think he tried to stay out of the headlines. But yeah, Baker Mayfield wanted to make it a point that this year's Cleveland Browns teams aren't going to be as vocal. And I remember we discussed it last year, how vocal they were going into a season for a franchise that really hadn't done anything for a long time.
Well, no doubt. And to me, I think people get it wrong with Baker Mayfield. It's not that he likes to talk. It's that he likes attention. And he loves attention.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's getting attention, I mean, not for me, because I'm actually saying Sam Darnold just to, you know, avoid attention. No. But the fact of the matter is, Mayfield's getting attention by not, well, in this case, he's talking about not talking, but whatever he's doing, he's still getting attention. So to me, any idea, because I heard serious people or at least people on shows saying that, like, this makes me so optimistic about Baker Mayfield. And it's like, he's, you know, he finally has grown up. It's like, what has he done? He's talking about not talking. All right. Why does this year matter so much? Well, it's the classic third year in which after this season's over for the first round picks, right? So these are first round picks we're talking about here. The fifth year option has to be picked up or not. And obviously Trubisky was an example of that a year earlier that just happened. Trubisky didn't have a great third year and his option was not picked up. Now I'm actually going to have a follow-up bet, Jonas, at the end of the show on Trubisky and will he start or not. So a good little tease there. But the fact of the matter is the stakes are not as high as they were with Trubisky. And here's why. The agreement changed this year, whereas for the quarterbacks drafted in 2018, it is not just the position that you were drafted in the first round. So with Trubisky, 1 through 10, which he was, had a quarterback, it was a $24 million fifth-year option, right? Not picked up. If somehow, some way, these first-rounders are not performing, it's performance-based, they could have a fifth-year option pickup that was much cheaper. So, yes, it matters, but it won't be that monster decision. And if it is a monster decision, it will be an easy one because it means the players have done well. It feels like that hasn't been discussed by enough people, the change with the fifth-year option.
Yeah, I think people are taking such a cutthroat approach with this draft class and just looking at, well, you know, if they don't perform this year, then, you know, we're just going to get rid of them altogether. Well, I mean, how do you really know what you have with these quarterbacks, especially, you know, a guy like Baker Mayfield, who's on, what, coach number three already in his career?
Some point, you got to – to me, on, you know, we do a weekly podcast outside of this, and – I was just ranting and raving. I can't lie. It was ranting and raving about how Andrew Luck, and let me ask you this question just out of left field. is based upon expectations entering the NFL with Andrew Luck. If you actually looked at his results, what percentage of his potential do you think was fulfilled? Meaning, if you thought of all the possible outcomes, he could have been the next Tom Brady, he could have been horrible. Where do you think he was it a below average outcome? Maybe would be the best way to ask it.
Yeah, I would say slightly below.
Yeah, I think well below. But, and you know what's funny? The Andrew Luck apologists, and, you know, I won't say any names. I'll just give initial CC. The Andrew Luck apologists would not concede that point no matter what. And the fact that he literally retired, you know, at a strange time right before the season starts and left his team out to dry, that was heroic, right, somehow. Yeah. And to me, Sam Darnold is actually in this same scenario. You were talking about Baker, here's some excuses. Well, man, it's the mono. It's the, oh, he doesn't have any playmakers, except, wait, you just got Le'Veon Bell, he's not a playmaker? Yeah. And it's like, oh, he's on different coaches too. And it's like, wow, is there ever a time that these players are going to just they're going to be responsible for their performance? Because you're right, it could be the deciding factor, but, you know, things like number of coaches and all that, but who really cares? Meaning, ultimately, you're either performing or you're not, right? Now, I get that if you're trying to predict the future, you could say, well, there's some things that caused this short sample size to be not as accurate of the truth as we think it could be. But that gets old soon enough, don't you think?
Yeah, and I also think that we sort of move the goalposts on who we're willing to criticize and who we're not, and it's strange. And Sam Darnold doesn't get nearly as much criticism as Mitch Trubisky does, and Trubisky's had a better career, and I don't even think it's close.
I want to hear Sam Darnold get any criticism.
It's weird.
I want to get his PR agent. I mean, I don't know who that is, but it's mighty good. I'm RJ Bo, straight out of Vegas. Without a PR agent, near as good as Sam. Well, with no PR agent, but not near as good. All right, Pro Football Focus. And, you know, I actually think they don't get enough credit, because what happens with Pro Football Focus – Collinsworth's involved, a lot of, you know, media talks about him a lot, but they talk about him on the surface, and those surface numbers are fine, but boy, they do some studies that really statistically look at what wins in the NFL and what is predictive that I think are unmatched. And one of them that I was just such a fan of was they were looking at how do quarterbacks do in a second year or after 2 years, and how can you project out from those 2 years how good they really are? And this is going to shock you. So you take the 2 years, and this is what obviously Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, and Lamar Jackson, and you could even say you could even say Josh Allen, but okay. And I was thinking about the quarterback,
Josh Rosen.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that conversation's over at this point. But if you look at Sam Darnold and where he projects to, here's the quarterbacks that are right around him. These are like the comps, as they say, the comparables. Blake Bortles, Geno Smith, Christian Ponder, Mark Sanchez. And these quarterbacks are slightly, but a little bit more than slightly ahead of Sam Darnold. Trubisky, Jared Goff, Mike Glennon, Colt McCoy. So literally, and Josh Allen is right there with Darnold. So amongst those three, is Darnold and Josh Allen are clustered together. And let's be clear, this is Pro Football Focus looking at every snap of the first two seasons from all these players, right? All the way Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, and they're putting them on a graph saying, based upon what, you know, the predictive value of what we saw in 2 years, here's where these quarterbacks are going to end up, at least projected, not for sure, because they match these people. And once again, it's Sam Darnold and Josh Allen together. and it's Blake Bortles, Geno Smith, Ponder, Sanchez, and they're behind Trubisky and Goff. And they're behind a lot of other people, right? Derek Carr, Andy Dalton. I mean, I'm just looking at the list. Jameis Winston, Matt, right? You know, but like literally the first, I mean, I'm going to keep moving. The first good quarter, I don't think Jared Goff is all that good. So let's call him a question mark. As you keep going, it's Dalton, Mariota, Nick Foles, Bridgewater, Bradford, Prescott. So Dak Prescott is the first good quarterback. And the distance between Sam Darnold and Dak is about the same from Dak to Russell Wilson or Mahomes. So it's like literally Sam Darnold and Josh Allen predictively, statistically, are about as bad as any quarterbacks have been in the last 10. Or this is from 2007 onward. First off, does that match your eye test? And number two, how shocked? I mean, this is pretty darn accurate.
I think it's, yeah, I agree. Nothing really jumps out to me that I would totally disagree on. I think he's been right about there. And here we are year three, and it's still all about potential, and potential with Sam Darnold. And yet with other quarterbacks, like we want to see it more now. We've got to see results now. But with Sam Darnold, we just look differently at him for some reason. And I have just not been impressed with him thus far. And I think I'm more I question his future in the NFL more than I do Baker Mayfield's by far.
Well, Mayfield's the one who actually, if you look where he's at, and again, now let's understand that his first season, I mean, Baker Mayfield after his rookie season, there was all the cause for optimism in the world, right? His second year is the concern. Now, to me, if those were flipped, meaning bad rookie year, good second year, I'd feel great. I think the fact that it is, you know, flipped, the inverse, and the rookie year was the good year, is more cause for concern. But blending those 2 years, here's the comparables for Mayfield. Dak, Joe Flacco, Tannehill, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, Carson Wentz, Winston, Matt Ryan. And actually, Mayfield is not, like, crazy far away from Lamar Jackson, which obviously Lamar didn't have a great rookie year.
Yeah.
So this is a different universe. Is Baker Mayfield, at least based on this Pro Football Focus projection, which to me is super sound statistically, is up there in that he should have a pretty good career. And Sam Darnold, Josh Allen are in, they're not going to be in the league in 5 years because, you know, where's Sanchez? Where's Geno Smith? Where's I think Colt McCoy, is he? I think he's a third stringer somewhere, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I've lost track of where Colt McCoy.
That's what we're talking about here.
Straight out of Vegas.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
This is a second bet on the question: Nick Foles, Trubisky. Who will start game one for the Bears? Now, what we told you a month ago, maybe, and it was quite sharp, hey, listen, this weekend, Trubisky, they're either going to pick up his fifth-year option or not. That was before. And we said if they don't, bet Nick Foles. And at the time, Nick Foles was minus 150, so 150 wins you 100. So he was a favorite, so, you know, moderate favorite, to be the starter. And what happened was, boom, Trubisky, no pickup. There was a couple hours that the line didn't move. A lot of Straight Out of Vegas listeners bet it, and they got Nick Foles at minus 150. And right now that line is minus 300. I believe the Trubisky is now a good bet. The more I listen to people that understand the NFL, is if they let Foles start, there will be no way for Trubisky to win the job back, really. I mean, not no way. It'd be harder. And they want him to, because I took that fifth-year option not getting picked up, that he's done. He might not even, you know, be a third stringer. But really, because it was $24 million, it looks like there's a reasonable chance if Trubisky does well that they would end up re-signing him, even though they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. They have every right to do that. So right now you can get Trubisky at plus 200. So this is what you call a guaranteed winner because we laid 150, Jonas. Now we're taking plus 200 on Trubisky. And I think even if you didn't have the Foles at minus 150, I think Trubisky at 2-1 to start game one is a mighty good bet. What's your gut feeling?
Yeah, I've always liked Trubisky in this bet because I think if you go to Foles right off the bat, you almost can't go back to Trubisky as opposed to if you set him out there and Trubisky plays poorly, then you make the move to Nick Foles moving forward.
Yeah, but you liked it all along, but you never had a sure lock profit like I did either, baby.
I'm terrible at gambling.
Zigzagging.
Why would I?